Hey, did I not say I was going to be more diligent at recording these podcasts? I did, and I am. And this is the Dirt Bike Channel Podcast. I'm your host, Kyle Brotherson. This podcast is brought to you by me. But hey, here's what you can do to support the podcast and anything else we're doing. And that is use my links to Rocky Mountain ATV. You can find them over at my website, dirtbikechannel.com. And when you're going to buy anything, gear, tools, tires, anything like that, head to Rocky Mountain ATV and use my link. So go to dirtbikechannel.com. Here's why you want to do that. A, it supports what we're doing here. And B, if you do that here in the month of March, it will enter you in to win the two dirt bikes that I'm giving away. I've got a 250 XC KTM and a Beta 250 RR. So head over there and do that. You've got until the end of the month to get in on that. I want to talk to you guys about the Stark Varg. So I have had a lot of people ask me questions about this. I got the Stark, as you know, I did a podcast on it. What was it? Like the beginning of the month here, 2 weeks ago, talking about my purchase story with the Stark Varg. And now I have been able to ride the bike one time. It took a while to get the, rear foot brake. Okay. So I got the foot brake assembly. One sec, I'm going to take a sip of caffeine here. I love these podcasts because it feels like we're just having a conversation. You and me sitting here, you're probably on the road and it's that time. It's between 3 and 5 o'clock in the afternoon, which is a dangerous time for me to be on the road. So I need a little bit of kick of caffeine. So I'm sipping on an Alani right here. So here's the deal. So we've got the rear foot brake installed on the bike, and now it's ready to go. So I put tubeless on the bike. I put my review tires on it, VE33S Gakota. It's the IRC VE33S Gakota tire on the rear. And then I just went with a Dunlop MX33 on the front. Honestly, I normally put a different tire on the front of these bikes, but I put a Dunlop on there because it was the only thing I had in stock. And at the moment, I couldn't get the tire that I wanted, so I just threw one of those on. And it'll be fine because most of the riding I'll probably end up doing, or a lot of the riding I'll end up doing with that bike is going to be on a motocross track anyway, because that's what it's purpose-built and designed for, okay? But, so I go out and I go to ride the bike, okay? So everything's set up kind of how I need it. I've got the clickers just in standard configuration, and I want to go out there and just kind of play with some of these modes. So it comes with this Android phone, and you connect, it connects to the bike, and then you just, you know, you just start an app and you say, okay, you've got 5 different modes that you can program right into the thumb switch on your left hand. So I had set up mode 1 at, I believe it was 20 horsepower, which is completely ridiculous. It doesn't help you in trail riding. Mode 2 was 30 horsepower. And then I had a 40 horsepower, a 50 horsepower, and a 60 horsepower. So essentially I had 20, 30, 40, 50, and 60 horsepower options. The bike does have, it is an 80 horsepower bike, but that I think is absolutely insane. Eventually I'll probably try it in 80 horsepower just to see. I don't know if I want to spoil it for you. Let me just kind of tell you how the day went. I did a top speed test at the end when I was basically out of battery, but you should be able to ride the bike at any horsepower, even if you're only at, you know, 10% battery. That shouldn't matter. At least I don't think it should matter. I'm kind of spoiling something here. But so I get out there and I just click the bike into basically the 40 horsepower setting. I rode it, you can tell immediately like 30 horsepower isn't enough, especially with how heavy it is. So I just kind of wanted to see, you know, put the bike at half power, 50 horsepower or 40 horsepower, and see what it feels like. And it feels a lot like a 250 four-stroke, you know, just for me going out through some of these desert trails and stuff. And if you are watching the YouTube channel today, I think, well, it's the 22nd of March. I don't know if I'll be able to publish this podcast tonight, but on my YouTube channel tonight, I will be releasing the first ride on that Stark Varg. So you'll be able to see that. Let me just double check that over here, because I think I have that set to go out tonight at like 6, so in about an hour and a half from when I'm recording right now. So most of you guys will have, I don't know when you'll get this. But by the way, if you like podcast stuff, I have been working on a different project. This is totally unrelated to dirt bikes. And again, like if you're not into, well, I'll save it for the end. Okay. I'm going to say, I have another project. I have another podcast that maybe you might want to go look up if you want to hear something that is not related to dirt bikes. But because I don't want to like, I don't want to bait you with something that you didn't come here for. Let me talk about the Stark first. So here we are. We take the bike out. Feels like a 254 stroke kind of right off the bat. And the what I was saying is the YouTube video will go live. It's supposed to go live tonight on this thing in about an hour and a half. So you'll be able to kind of see this, but I'm giving you the more in-depth version of kind of what happened with the bike. And you'll hear more of the story here on the podcast than you will hear in that first video, because I'm just going to spoil some of the things. So I get out there and I start riding the bike at 40 horsepower, and it feels really good. In some ways, it felt super snappy, and yeah, you can like through whoops and through the trails and different things. Like I was lofting the wheel over these places and stuff. Yes, I still want there to be a bloody clutch. I hate the fact that there's no clutch. but it was fun. You do start to feel the weight of it as you go more and more. It's not like overly heavy, but it just feels like another thing that is weird with it is like I set it down once, cause I had the drone out there and the drone was following me, and the kickstand is stupid on the bike. They whiffed on the kickstand so bad. The kickstand is way too short and it allows the bike to lean way too far, way over, way far. And if you're on concrete, it works. But if you're on any dirt, it doesn't work at all, because then the bike is leaning over so much and so much of the weight is on the kickstand, it just pushes it right down to the ground. I mean, that was an epic fail, guys. You got to have a bigger foot on the thing. But the main thing is don't let the bike tip over so dang far. It just tips over too far and then too much weight is on it. Any of the bikes that I've had, regardless of how large the foot pad is, if the bikes were leaning over that far, it's not going to stand. It's kind of like if you try to lean the bike over, or you try to put the kickstand down on your bike, but you're on the downhill side or whatever, it's not going to stand because the bike's going to tip too far, and then too much weight is on it and it'll push it into the ground. That's what happens on level ground with the Stark Varg. So anyway, one of the times I needed to just go grab my drone out of the sky, so I just set the bike down like onto the handle, you know, the hand grip, laid it on the ground like I do, and cool, you don't have gas that's going to leak out, so that's great. But then when you go to pick the thing back up, you're like, dang, this is heavy. And I think some of it is because the weight is higher up in the center of gravity, probably because of the battery, I'm guessing. But yeah, so you do end up starting to feel the weight of the thing a little bit. Let me grab one more sip here. That was that. And obviously, it's valved too stiff for the type of terrain that I was in. I was in some rockier stuff for a little bit. I also went out into some flat, you know, more wide open stuff. We'd be talking like third gear, fourth gear stuff if you had gears. And that's what I went for. When I was in more of the first gear, second gear stuff, the front fork was pretty harsh, especially on the sharp edges and just like a lot of the bouldery rocks and stuff like that. It's pretty dang stiff, which I'm not complaining about, because they didn't make this bike for off-road. It literally is made for motocross, so I'm not going to complain about that. I just wanted to see what the motor was like and see what the handling was like and see how stable it felt and those types of things. Interestingly enough, the first thing that I noticed right off the bat was just that I was hearing so much of the rear tire. And I have an electric motion bike. It's kind of like, it's a trials bike that kind of has a trail seat or whatever. And we just use it around the house and kind of mess around. I did try to go on one ride with the bike, but it was so boring. I only went on one trail ride with that bike and it was boring as all get out. The Stark is not boring. So that's one thing that's really cool. But I did hear the rear tire a lot. And I think one of the things these electric bikes do that they're going to offer is the ability for you to just be a little bit more in tune with if you're breaking traction or not on the rear wheel, because you can hear it now. They're not silent by any means. These bikes have a lot of motor whine. There's a lot of just like chain noise. So they're not, it's not like they're silent, but they don't have that really loud motor that overpowers what's happening with the rear wheel. And so I was hearing it like hit things, like I was going through whoops and I was hearing a different sound. And immediately I could tell I was actually hearing my tire hit rocks in the back instead of just, I know it sounds weird, but it's just a little bit different thing. So that was interesting. And as I rode more and more, I rode for maybe 10, 15 minutes, and range is going to be an issue. We already know this. Like I went I think I'd have to open the Stark app, but I think I went right around 27 miles and used 80% of my battery. I started with like 84, 85% and I ended with 5%. And so I used 80% of the battery in like 27 miles. And it wasn't like it was technical. Some of it was faster. But it, range is definitely going to be an issue on these bikes. It's not enough. And then it takes a long time to charge it, especially if you don't have like a special, I don't know, stage one charging is a certain rate. Stage two charging is a different rate. Don't quote me on these things. But as of currently right now, I'm only able to charge the thing with an adapter to plug it into a regular wall outlet. It comes with a charge, like a plug that looks kind of like a dryer plug, but it's not a dryer plug, at least for what we have in the US. It's something that they is more common in Europe. And I think it's more of like a 220 volt setup to charge off 220 power, like a 30 amp breaker or something like that. But I don't have that specific plug-in, and nobody here in the US does. I might be able to find an adapter or something, but I haven't worried about it too much because I'm like, I've already brought the bike home and it can just charge slow. And it's probably not a bad idea to charge the bike slower anyway. Like even with the app right now, they have the ability to charge at 10 amps or like 3 amps. And that's just charging off the, like the regular 110 type setup. And it takes a long time to charge, but I'm just like, you're probably going to bring it home and then just charge it overnight. You're probably only going to charge it. You're probably going to ride it and drain the battery. And then it's going to take so long to charge. It doesn't matter if it takes an hour or 4 hours, you're not going to ride again that day is kind of the thing. But it's not going to, it won't be 1 hour. Like the way I've seen it, it's going to take 3 to 5 hours to charge just off the slow portion. Now, this is just me guessing because I didn't even time it. Like I went out there and I was charging the bike and I was taking some notes on this and I took some pictures. And I know I'm jumping around a little bit here, guys, but like, so here I started charging the bike. when I saw what percentage it was 327. It was a 13%. So then an hour and three, no, it, let's see, two, it would be two, an hour and a half later, it's at 51%. So it took an hour and a half to go from 13 to 51. And then I checked it another hour and 10 minutes later, and then it was up to 76%. So we were getting about 20, 25% charge per hour is kind of how that was looking. So just based on that, and that was charging at 10 amps. Based on that, it's going to take 3 or 4 hours to get a full charge, just on the slow charging. But anyway, so I'm out there and I'm riding the bike and it felt at the 40 horsepower setting. It was really good in some places, but then as soon as it got a little bit more wide open, it's cool because you have like instant power right off the bottom. But then once you're moving along a little bit, you can twist the throttle all the way and like not a ton was happening at the 40 horsepower setting. So I'm like, I want a little bit more. So then I bumped up to my 50 horsepower setting and oh my gosh, then the bike comes alive. That 50 horsepower setting felt a lot like a 252 stroke. It was just super snappy and you had to really respect the power. Just like on trails that, you know, out in the desert through some sagebrush and some things. Now at 50 horsepower, you had to pay attention to what was happening with your wrist. Because you'd come out of a little bit of a corner, a little bit of a turn, and if you gave very much throttle at all, bam, the bike is coming to attention and just the front wheel is just lifting right off the ground. And so I almost felt like the more I did it and I kept changing between 40 horsepower and 50 horsepower, by the end of the day, well, the end of the ride day, I ended up switching my power modes around to where I had a 45 horsepower setting. Because at least for that day in that terrain with those conditions, for me, I felt 45 horsepower. I wanted something right in the middle of 40 and 45, which is, right in the middle of 40 and 50, which is a cool thing about the bike is that you're able to dial in exactly how much power you want. You want just a little bit more? Okay, let's 1 horsepower, 2 horsepower, whatever it is. And you can tell the difference. Like there is a big difference between 40 and 50 horsepower. And then that 45 horsepower felt just right where I wanted it. And so that's pretty cool, you know? And you are getting real-time data on what your battery power is. I left it on 80% regen braking on all the modes that I did. And even 80% regeneration braking, that's like it's where it's kind of like putting some of the power back into the motor as you're coasting down a hill. It's basically like an engine brake where it's putting that power back into the battery, but it isn't, it's not even, I would say that 80% regen is about as much engine braking as a two stroke has. I need to ride it a little bit more and just kind of see, but it's not a lot of engine braking. Like I have a Tesla, I've got a Tesla Model 3 I've had for 2.5 years and it has this regenerative braking. And when a lot of times you don't even need to use a brake in that, you just let off the gas and it's just slowing it down so much. The Stark is not anywhere near that much regen, at least not at 80%. And so I've just left it there, because I do want a little engine braking, but, you kind of feel like you're coasting on a two stroke is what it feels like when you let off the gas, which I think is totally fine. Like I don't like a lot of engine braking because then you're pitching the bike forward and back and I don't love that. I'd rather just have my engine be for speeding up and my brakes be for slowing down. And that's how I've tried to ride. let's talk about brakes. Brakes are great. They've got the Brembo brakes. And now that I've got the rear foot brake, it feels just like a regular dirt bike. I thought about leaving the handbrake on there, but I just don't want any cross-contamination with what I'm doing right now. I wanted it to look and feel exactly like a dirt bike, like what of all of the other bikes that I've had. You know, if there was like a Y option or an option where you could have both the foot brake and the handbrake, I might be interested in that, but I didn't have that ability. It just, when I ordered the complete foot brake, it came with the entire thing, all the pieces completely assembled and already bled out of the hydraulic there. So that was kind of nice. It was expensive. It was like $400 and it took like 3 weeks to get it. That's another thing. I was very careful with the bike. I did not want to go in any sort of an enduro situation because I didn't want to break anything like plastics or anything because it takes a long time to get parts. Unless your dealer is stocking parts, which I don't think the dealer where I am is stocking parts. They didn't have the foot brake even that I wanted. Like I'm sitting there going, that seems like it would be a common thing that they would have. They didn't have that. So I don't want to be breaking things on it. It's going to be harder to get parts for these things. And I'd already purchased parts and it took 3 weeks to get it. And I don't want to, I was like, so that was affecting how I rode the bike. Just that alone. But the brakes are great, right? So Brembo brakes were great on the bike. That felt really normal. And it's just like most of the other bikes that I've had, the more I rode it, the longer I rode it, the more comfortable I felt with it. But it does still feel heavy like a four stroke, more like a 450. I'm gonna have to ride it some more and just kind of go back to back with some other bikes and things. But it feels like a dirt bike. It feels like a freaking snappy, crazy dirt bike. I put it up to 60 horsepower at one point when I was going back to the truck, and it's freaking scary. Like it is the fastest accelerating, scariest motorcycle I've ever been on, dirt bike I've ever been on at 60 horsepower. I can't even imagine what it's like at 80. And this is a little bit shorter podcast. One thing that was interesting to me is I thought then, does that mean the bike's going to do 85 miles an hour? It did not. My bike here, and I'm at 5,000 feet is where I was riding it. Not that that should matter, because it shouldn't matter if you're at sea level or not with a bike like that, because it's not naturally aspirated, but I could only get it to go about 68, 69 miles an hour. It might have gone to 70, and I was pinned at 60 horsepower for like three blocks. I went up a hill, I went up the road, it was a little bit of a slope, and then I turned around and went down the road. It didn't seem to matter. It was just doing between 69 and 70. It might have gotten to 70, but it was kind of bouncing between 68 and 69 on the top speed, which is not as fast as most of the motorcycles I've ridden here at this altitude. Like if I have a 250, like it's hard to know because most of the dirt bikes don't have speedometers, but I've had the XCWs have had speedometers and they're pushing 80. Like I can do 80 on like an XCW, like a KTM 300 XCW or 250 XCW, they'll do 80 miles an hour. So about 10 miles an hour faster than what this Stark Varg did. Now I could turn it up to 80 horsepower, but that isn't really fair because these other motorcycles don't have 80 horsepower to get to that speed. They just have transmissions that help you stay more in the power. So I think that might be part of what is happening. But it is scary as crap getting up to that speed. Like it's just so fast, especially in a real, like if you're just doing a drag race or whatever, like it's fast. And it's like when I was doing it out on my street in front of me, it's like you're having to try to keep the wheel down. You know, when you're at that 60 horsepower setting, you're not, it's not like you don't have to try to wheelie. You have to try not to wheelie at 60 horsepower. But the top speed isn't going to blow anybody's doors off, at least with the stock gearing. And I don't know if you'd want to change gearing. I don't know. It brings up a whole ton of questions. I did have one experience of trying to start the bike out on a hill. And I did think, well, that was better than I thought, because you're able to modulate the power really slow and just get the power to come on really, really slow. And you can hear the rear wheel if it's spinning. Gosh, I wish I had a clutch. I mean, if this bike had a clutch, and if they build one, because I know that they've got that thing, like Taddy Blazuziak is now working with them. And if he doesn't get them to put a clutch in this bike, like, Taddy, come on. Like, that's what it needs. But yeah, so I mean, it was interesting. It was definitely interesting. I was like, huh, this bike is kind of crazy. And it's scary fast when you get in the higher, the higher horsepower settings. And it's gentle giant when you put it in the lower horsepower settings. And it's valve too stiff for off-road. But I'm not complaining about that, because that's not what they made the bike for. They didn't make it for doing the off-road stuff. They made it for running on a motocross track, which I hope to be able to do here within the next month or so or two, and just see what the bike feels like on a track and run it at that 40 horsepower setting and see if that's what I want. And then maybe run it at the 45 horsepower, 50 horsepower setting, and just kind of see what that feels like. And that could be a really cool thing for me and the boys, is to have a bike that you can, dial the power up or down. I don't know how long you'll be able to run it at the track. That remains to be seen. Probably not as much as a gas bike, because you could just fill your gas bike back up. Whereas on one of these, we might have billions of generators in the parking lots of these tracks trying to slowly charge up these Starks, which is not ideal. And you've heard me talk about that in the past. Like, we're just switching from one fossil fuel to the next. Most of our electricity here in the US is generated by coal. And so we're switching from a gas power to a coal power is what it is. And it makes the bike really heavy, and it makes it hard to charge, and all those things. But at the same time, it's a cool bike, and it felt really interesting to ride the thing. Again, I only got about, I think it took about 80% of the power, and I went about 27 or so miles. So that's not great. And that is in kind of real conditions. It was warm. It was like 55, 60, so it's not too cold. It wasn't technical at all. It was more fast, open, second gear to fourth gear type stuff. I wasn't really doing hardly any first gear type terrain. It was second gear, third gear, fourth gear equivalency of terrain. And that took about 80% of the power to do 27 miles. So, if you might be able to squeeze 40 miles out of it, especially if you had long stretches of road. But if it was tricky at all, and I don't know, we'll just have to see how far it'll go on the slower terrains or whatever. But I wasn't trying to conserve power, and I also wasn't trying to just drain the power totally out, so that's a thing. So that's what I've got for you. Again, if you want to support if you want to support these podcasts, use my links to Rocky Mountain ATV. They're over at dirtbikechannel.com. And you can get entered to win the KTM 250 XC. It's a 2024. And there's also a 2024 Beta 250 RR. So the KTM is fuel injected with the TBI motor. Amazing, amazing bike. And then the Beta, I put a Smart Carb, an SC2 Smart Carb on the bike, so it'll run at any altitude. It'll be very, very easy for people to ride that bike and get it to run amazing. And that's what's going on here in the month of March. So head over to dirtbikechannel.com, grab a t-shirt or whatever I have. I don't have a ton of stuff over there. By the way, if we don't like this, this may be the last sweepstakes that I'm ever able to do, or I might just have to change it completely and not offer product on my website and just kind of push the affiliate links and just see if that works. But like, I've had less than half of the uptake on the sweepstakes this time around than I normally would have at this point. And each sweepstakes has to fund the next one, and this one is not going to fund the next one. I may lose money on it, but my loss is your gain. So go to dirtbikechannel.com and get entered to win that bike before the month of March here in 2024 is over. And then one last thing, this is where the dirt bike content stops. So dirt bike content has just stopped. If you're interested in like listening to another podcast that I've been working on, let me just give you a warning right now. This other podcast that I've been working on has nothing to do with dirt bikes. It has adult language, which you've never heard on my channel. Like on my YouTube channel, I've got 1300 videos. I don't swear. And I typically don't swear on this podcast, but the podcast I'm talking about, there is adult language. There's adult themes. It's about dating of all things in middle age. As a lot of you guys know, I got divorced a couple of years ago, and I've, you know, been trying to be single dad and business owner and date. And it's kind of crazy, dating in middle age and kind of getting back into that. Well, essentially I'm working on this podcast with a woman. We went on 3 dates. And then something happened in between this, you know, we had 3 really good dates, but we never made it to 4. And we decided then to get together in front of microphones and cameras and record a 9-part series, which was highlighting what happened in our dating and why it stopped and what lessons we might be able to learn, because men out there are totally confused about what's happening. Women are totally confused about what's happening in this middle-aged dating. And so we just wanted to like, and here's the thing, in the first, you know, 6 episodes, it's mostly lighthearted. There's some like more, you know, a little bit of awkward stuff here and there. But by the time you get to episode 7, 8, 9, which they're coming out weekly, it gets pretty intense. And there are times that we're laughing. There are times that we're not laughing. And there are times that we're crying, like both me and her podcast. My podcast host or co-host is named Emily. And she was gracious enough to sit down in front of a camera and do this. And so anyway, the podcast is called 3 Dates Later. You can find it on Apple. You can find it on Spotify. It's 3 Dates Later podcast, 3DL. You can find it on, you can find it at 3DatesLater.com as well. There's social accounts like Facebook and Instagram and TikTok and all that stuff. But that's something, that's another side project that I've been working on in my off hours when it's not Dirt Bike Channel. So go ahead and check that out. 3 Dates Later is the name of the podcast. So again, it's not something that you want to listen to in front of your kids. It's adult themes, adult topics, and adult language. So just be warned on that thing right there. So, okay. And don't send me hate email. Like I've already warned you. I continue to make family friendly stuff for Dirt Bike Channel on the YouTube, on this podcast here and on the YouTube channel. But that 3 Dates Later, it's not family stuff. So you've been warned. Okay. All right. Thanks so much for everything you guys are, for every support that you've ever given. You guys are definitely the reason why this exists. If you've ever bought anything on my website or you've used the links to Rocky Mountain ATV, the reason why this still exists. And until next time, leave a single track. Thanks.